You are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Locked On Saints podcast, your daily podcast covering the New Orleans Saints, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, where you get to hear the local experts on the biggest stories, your team, every day. Ross Jackson here, your host, covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Saints, like nobody else does it. Lead analyst over at AllSaintsConsidered.com, your source for up-to-the-minute Saints news for Saints fans by Saints fans. You know what it is. Go ahead and throw me a follow over on Twitter at RossJacksonASC. If this is your first time catching the podcast, welcome and thank you so much for being here. Please be sure to subscribe, share, review, all of that. It has been a big help to me and will help you also keep up to date with all of the new episodes as they drop every Monday through Friday. Remember, you can find Locked On Saints on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now the new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as just about anywhere else you get your podcasts. And of course, when you're out on the road, don't forget to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Saints. Welcome into today's episode of Locked On Saints. Today, we are welcoming our final guest before the NFL draft begins on Thursday. This guy has been a big part of my trajectory in Saints media and has always means a ton to have him come out and be on the show. You've heard him on the Sports Hangover on ESPN Radio NOLA and many other radio stations, making appearance after appearance as one of the go-to guys with what's going on with the Saints. He's been calling the shots all offseason before the Saints make them. A pleasure to welcome in Creole Stradamus himself, my good friend Brian B. Enemy, who you can follow on Twitter at public_B_enemy, one of the best Twitter handles out there. How you living, my brother?
I'm good, family. Nothing but good vibes over here, man. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, man, we always appreciate having you here, homie, and I thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's a busy time for you. On today's episode, Brian is going to be with us throughout the entire thing, discussing some big news, I guess the biggest news really in the NFL today, that Frank Clark trade to the Kansas City Chiefs. We can talk a little bit about who won, you know, what happened with all of that, but also what it means for Cam Jordan and the Saints as Cam Jordan is looking down to a potential extension coming his way soon. We all have our fingers crossed for that, at least. Then in the second segment, we'll talk about pick number 62, the Saints' first selection in the draft as of right now and where the Saints should look. And then we'll wrap up the show by talking about another trade possibility that you've heard floated around a little bit for the Saints, but what the conundrum is that surrounds that. Brian is here today to help bring you all of that and a little bit Lanyap right here on today's episode of Locked On Saints. So Brian, what are your initial thoughts on that Seattle-Kansas City trade for Frank Clark? We'll talk about the trade first. Seattle got a 2019 first round pick, 29th overall this year, a 2020 second round pick from next year, and then they swapped third round picks to send Frank Clark to Kansas City. How you feeling about all of that, just in sort of initial reaction?
Well, I think definitely the Kansas City Chiefs got a lot stronger today, especially with the addition of a guy like a Frank Clark, who's, you know, producing at a high clip right now as far as one of the better pass rushers out of the NFC, now going to the AFC. Mm-hmm. And it also kind of lends good for a guy like a Patrick Mahomes, because what you have now is Patrick Mahomes, it seems as if the Kansas City Chiefs are trying to be built to play with the lead. Pat Mahomes right. can drop 50 on anybody with that offense. And, of course, now what you have is a defense that's going to be able to play with their ears pinned back, able to go after the quarterback, and what better way to do that than to get a premier pass rusher like a guy, Frank Clark, who's going to come in and kind of give you those snaps and play the run as well. So I think for Kansas City, they definitely got stronger. For Seattle, on the other hand, you get a chance to kind of bolster your roster. You get another first-round pick. Mm-hmm. You get to add to that, you know, to that young and building team that you have going on, led now by Russell Wilson, that the Legion of Boom is, you know, boom is kind of gone, and, you know, by the wayside. So now you have a team strictly led by Russell Wilson, and we'll see if the, you know, the Seattle Seahawks can continue the trend of saying, you know what, we don't really need the Richard Shermans and the Brandon Browns. We're going to follow Russell, and he's going to be our guy.
Absolutely. You look at the Seattle Seahawks, who only had before this trade four selections in this year's draft. Now they bump up to five, and then they get two in the first round. You got to imagine that they're in a pretty good scenario to where they can start building around Russell Wilson right away on Thursday, potentially going O-line, maybe even getting him a receiver, somebody as a weapon out there for that offense.
No question about it. And when you think about what Russell Wilson has done, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the guy's missed the playoffs once in his career.
Right.
And that's pretty impressive to say you have two Super Bowl appearances, as well as also having, you know, of course, you should be two Super Bowl victories, quite honestly, if it wasn't for Pete Carroll and having, you know, the biggest gap outside of Atlanta Falcons, of course. But I think with that being said, you know, we're talking about a true leader in Russell Wilson who's done it all without any real legit weapons. You tried to bring in Jimmy Graham. That didn't work. You know, you had Doug Baldwin pretty much there. You had Golden Tate for a while, but nothing really elite to speak of. So I can only imagine what would happen if you get Russell Wilson in elite offense. And of course, you know, for the most part, Seattle was a ground and pound team. I think we'll see now they'll try to air it out and allow Russell Wilson to lead them to victory instead of it just being, you know, more of a game manager, if you will.
Right, absolutely. Trying to keep him out of the situations where he's consistently running for his life and instead he's running the game. I'm all about that for Seattle. And of course, that means a lot for Saints fans because, you know, the Saints have to travel to the West Coast to take on Seattle in the third week of the season. So depending on how they continue to build around Russell Wilson, what they continue to do with that offense, there's a lot of reasons for Saints fans to be paying attention to what the Seahawks do with these picks.
Yeah, no question, because of course, you want to pay attention to Seattle because they're one of the teams you have to compete with in the NFC. Say what you will about Seattle in a rebuild stage, but they were still able to be one of the teams on the cusp last year and possibly make it a playoff run. And then you look at them this year and you say, well, if they did it last year and that was just Russell Wilson and a bag of dust, what can they do if they continually add? As you say, they now have 5 draft picks. And, of course, the one thing you can never count out is flying all the way to the great Pacific Northwest and playing Seattle with the 12th man and the weather conditions going on out there. It's been a nightmare for the Saints over the years. Don't want to kind of give them the confidence of thinking that's how it's going to be moving forward. And you're coming off of back-to-back in which you'll play the Rams and the Seahawks. That's not something you really want to do for travel purposes. That's why I think they're going to maintain themselves somewhere on the West Coast, maybe in L.A., you know, and that way they can eliminate some of the travel. But either way it goes, my goodness, you know, to play the Seahawks and the Rams back-to-back, not even from a statistical point of view of, you know, X's and O's, just logistics-wise, that's pretty tough. And you want to definitely pay attention to what Seattle's doing over there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one way that this whole move affects the Saints. Another way is that Frank Clark gets a big contract, 5 years, $105.5 million, which exceeds DeMarcus Lawrence's total over the extension that he just recently got, $63.5 million guaranteed. So we got to know and we got to look at this and start to think, what does this mean for the Saints and Cam Jordan?
Well, I think if you want to ask winners and losers in this whole trade scenario, well, one winner would be the Kansas City Chiefs, of course. The second winner would be Frank Clark. I think the third winner would be Cam Jordan, because now you get to look at those numbers and kind of, you know, do the little hand rub thing that, you know, that's so famous nowadays. You know, Birdman Williams Cash Money. It's the idea that Cam has to be looking at chops in that contract, because we're talking about a guy that produced double-digit sacks. I believe at this point he's on pace to eclipse the 60 sack mark real soon if he can get another double-digit sack here. But it's the idea that he started his rookie season with one sack. It's now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Cam has 48, 49.
He's around there.
Exact number of that, but we're talking about one of the premier elite defensive ends, and he actually was able to produce his own stat, which was a triple-double with, you know, sacks, tackles for loss, and batted passes. So we're talking about an all-around elite defensive end who's now only going to be 29 years old, maybe 30 when he's looking at his next contract. He's looking at a huge payday, and I think the Saints are going to give it to him, because I think moving forward, once Drew Brees decides to hang up his cleats, it's going to be a guy like Cam Jordan who becomes the face of the franchise.
And I think it would be a welcome. He would be a welcome leader too, just knowing everything about it. And you can see it already, even in the midst of these contract talks with DeMarcus Lawrence getting paid and all that. You see how much Cam loves playing for this team and being here in New Orleans. He already went to Twitter a couple times talking about how he would take a hometown discount if given that no trade clause. So there's a lot to look forward to for Saints fans with Cam Jordan sticking around.
The most important thing you said there was that he wants to be in New Orleans. And if you know, I could transition just quickly to say, you know, about the Pelicans basketball team and there being so many guys who are maybe one in particular who seem not to really want to embrace what New Orleans is. I think you see the total opposite with the New Orleans Saints, especially with Cam Jordan. This is a guy that embraces the New Orleans culture. He's very active on social media when it comes to being interactive with Saints fans. He's definitely involved in the community. And in fact, I know for, you know, a fact, he's actually reached out to some of the local people and included them in things that he's done. Like, he had a few luncheons for his defensive linemen, and he had local people cater those things for them. So I think when you look at a guy like Cam Jordan, you couldn't ask for a better face of the franchise with him, Michael Thomas, and Alvin Kamara moving forward. These are guys that embrace New Orleans. They embody what New Orleans is all about, the underdog mentality, but still being able to show up in the big moments. I love what Cam Jordan stands for, and that's why I want him to remain long-term.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you can say about the city of New Orleans and the New Orleans Saints is that just like any other sports city, the city loves their team, but there's something specific about the way that the team loves the city back here. We've seen that from, you know, from the moment that they ended up in New Orleans and they ended up in the Gulf, and then through Katrina, and then even through now, there's a different energy in New Orleans when it comes to the Saints and the Houdat Nation. Sorry, y'all. We're going to take a quick step aside here. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, Brian's still with us. We're going to be talking about who we think that the Saints should be looking at pick number 62, their first selection of the 2019 NFL Draft at this moment. So we'll talk about that coming up right here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, Houdat Nation, welcome back to Locked On Saints, your team every day. Lots of busy, busy times going on right now as we gear up closer and closer to the NFL draft. It is coming down on Thursday. That's when it's all kicking off. Make sure you're staying up to date with all of that by subscribing to the Locked On Saints podcast here. And then, of course, you can do so through what has become one of my favorite iPhone apps, and I'm sure it's on all the other smartphone apps as well, or all the other smartphones as well, is the Himalaya podcast app. Make sure you download that and also subscribe to the Locked On Saints podcast. We got Brian Bienemy here in the building. You can follow him on Twitter at public_B_enemy. Still one of the greatest Twitter handles in the game, as far as I'm concerned. Brian and I just finished talking about the Frank Clark trade, what it means for the Saints, what it means for the Chiefs and the Seahawks as well. But now we're going to focus down to the Saints. We got the draft coming up. Saints right now on the board for the first time in the 2019 NFL draft on Friday at pick number 62 in the second round. Let's start sort of a little bit more broad and then we'll focus in. Let's start with position here. What are some positions that you can see the Saints targeting if they stand pat at 62?
Well, I think the first thing that you want to look at, and I know this is going to kind of rub some of the Houdat Nation the wrong way, but I think the sexiest and probably the best pick is going to be offensive line. You really don't know what's going to happen with Andre Speed. He has a contract situation going on. This is the last year of his contract, but you've already lost a guy like Max Hunger, leadership as well as his ability to kind of, you know, make the line calls and the checks at the line. You bring in a Nick Easton, but you still have a problem on the left side of your line, which is Teron Armstead, blessed be, you know, when he's out there and he's healthy, he's one of the best, you know, tackles in football. But that doesn't happen very often. And then you have Andre Speed again, who I mentioned a moment ago, who's also very injury prone in and of itself. And you have no real depth behind Ryan Ramczyk and Larry Warford. So if I'm going to pick and I'm going to say I'm staying at 62, I'm thinking offensive lineman may be the first spot on my draft board that I say, you know what, if there's an offensive lineman and it's anywhere near close, if I have 2-3 guys rated in the same bubble, I'm taking the offensive lineman because I think that pick will last me a lot longer.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been all about the idea of offensive line for the Saints for this draft in particular. The listeners here have heard me talk a ton about Michael Dieter out of Wisconsin, but there's a guy out of Mississippi State that you like as well, Elgton Jenkins, right?
No question about it. Big, physical, nasty attitude. And he just kind of fits what you want in, especially if you can place him at that left guard spot where Peterson and Manning. I mean, you could think about the athleticism of a Teron Armstead and a guy like Jenkins on the outside. Those two guys being able to kind of clear space for Alvin Kamara coming behind him on a screen or a wheel route. That's just dangerous in the open field. And if you're a little DB, and I've seen even Andre, you know, to give him credit, just absolutely destroy DBs out there. He's not the most athletic of guys. So when you see a guy like, you know, Jenkins kind of, you know, coming down, all 6'5 of him, you know, bouldering down on you, that's not a guy you want to see if you're a little bitty DB, especially when, you know, Kamara's somewhere hiding behind him. That could be dangerous for a guy out there on the outside. So I'd love to see that athleticism. But, you know, it would not surprise me. I know the guy from Wisconsin that you mentioned is an absolute stud. I mean, you can't go wrong with Wisconsin O-lineman, as the Saints already know with Ryan Ramczyk.
That's right, man. I put out an article about that not too long ago about the success of Wisconsin offensive linemen over the last 15 years in the NFL. And they, I mean, when you look at Joe Thomas, when you look at Travis Frederick, and you look at Ryan Ramczyk, they're doing work out there, these Wisconsin guys. But a little note here on Elgton Jenkins, you talked about his versatility. He played snaps in college at center, left tackle, right tackle, and left guard. You really can't get more versatile than that. And the Saints love having those versatile offensive linemen for sure.
Question about it. I mean, I think versatility is the one thing that you can always count on with the Saints, not only just, you know, their skill positions, but definitely the offensive line. They value guys who can play more than one position, especially because the O-linemen, you know, they are the iron men of NFL football. They're the guys that don't get a breather. They're the guys that don't, you know, kind of get to come out of the game. When they're in, they're in. And you're talking about running with 300-pound guys the entire game trying to move them out the way. I mean, Saints definitely value versatility. And if you have a guy that can play three positions, which is why they went after a Willow Clapp, who I would say is a poor man's version of Dieter, I mean, I think that's why you have those guys. You have guys that play multiple positions in case. We found out the hard way with the Andre Speed, and I hate to kind of keep banging on him, but we found out he's not really good on the right side. You put him on the left side, he excels now. So I think that's why the versatility is more important, because you can't really pigeonhole offensive linemen. You have to have guys that can play all positions, including the center position if possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we watched Max Unger just not last season, but the season before play every single offensive snap for the Saints. So you really don't get a breather at that position. And because the Saints like their offensive line really athletic, you're not really getting a breather on the field. There's no plays to take off. You're always looking for work in the Saints offense. What about any other positions out there that stand out to you at 62? You got anything else?
Well, of course, I know, now I'll make everybody happy and say wide receiver, but I think people kind of get confused in the idea of they always believe that the Saints are looking for the next slot receiver, which is far from the truth. Mm-hmm. The Saints are looking for an outside receiver, and if anything, and if you pay attention, the Saints have a type. They don't want the little small, fast guys like Ted Ginn, and I know everybody's favorite is right now with Paris Campbell because of his speed. Huh. To Ohio State, it seems like a natural fit, but I think the Saints are looking more for the 6'2", 6'3", big guy, mm-hmm. Who can kind of get open, 6'4", another, maybe a Michael Thomas type of clone, maybe a Traquan Smith type of clone. And for all of those who are banging on Smith, you got to remember, this guy went to Central Florida. He didn't really have a ton of snaps in big, big games. And now he's coming to the NFL, which is big boy football every week. I think he just hit a rookie wall. I think he'll be fine. Keith Kirkwood, also a guy that they're going to keep trying to develop. But by and large, they're looking for a Ted Ginn replacement. They're looking for somebody on the outside who can help out, which is why you heard Sean Payton are in the offseason when they brought in Jared Cook. That's our number two guy right there, because mm-hmm. Jared Cook is going to get a lot of those targets and be lined up all over the place. So if I had to put money on it, I'd say the guy that you and I discussed via Twitter on, as far as wide receiver is concerned, it would not shock me to see J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. It would not shock me to see him be the guy that they pick up. That is a guy that's absolutely a beast in the red zone. He can fly by DBs. He's physical. He loves to block. And, of course, he has pedigree, which I found out this part I didn't even know about him, that he has a basketball background, which I didn't know because his parents played basketball overseas. And, of course, as we know from the Saints with Jimmy Graham, that'll be a really big topic. They love those guys who can box out and play big in the red zone.
Absolutely. And Arcega-Whiteside has that ability. He's not just one of those guys that can be, that can fit sort of that stereotypical what we think about with wide receivers. We think about, somebody that can get open intermediate and then intermediate or deep and then, make the electrifying yards after catch play. That's not really what Arcega-Whiteside's game is. And that's not a knock on him. It's just that what he does otherwise is really, really good. He's a jump ball guy. He can do that. He can create separation better than most other wide receiver prospects in this draft, but also has the ability in the red zone to just go up and get it. And the Saints really haven't, aside from Michael Thomas, haven't really had that in quite a while. And so when you've got somebody that's, like Michael Thomas, that's going to get double, triple covered over the course of every game, and then now you've added a weapon like Jared Cook, and then you potentially add another weapon like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, it becomes a pick your poison offense for any defense that's taking them on.
No question about it. And the most important thing is that when it comes to the Saints, they've always done this. And for me, if you guys out there listening, you can kind of maybe paint the picture when you hear this, it's the idea of, I think what the Saints really want is a reboot of the 2011 offense. That was probably the world's greatest offense we've ever seen in NFL history. And it was the idea that they had a versatile back in Darren Sproles. They had a power back to match it. They had a tight end in Jimmy Graham, which created a lot of mismatch nightmares. And they had speed along the outside. Mm-hmm. Of course, they still had their special receiver in Colston, and they still had their guy in the slot with Lance Moore. But when you look at that 2011 offense, that was about as unstoppable of an offense as I've ever seen. And to be honest with you, I know so many people love the 2009 team, and rightfully so, because they brought home the gold. But the idea for me, I think the 2011 offense would have ran all over the 2009 team, and it wouldn't have been close. And I think that's what Sean Payton is trying to recreate. And a guy like Arcega-Whiteside would just fit in perfectly because he's able to do something that not many receivers coming into the league can do. That's create separation and understand the purpose of the back shoulder throw, which is Drew Brees' favorite throw.
Absolutely. And they got really close to trying to, the last time that we talked was right before the 2018 season. And one of the things that we talked about was how close this team felt to feeling like the 2011 team. And unfortunately, the gas just kind of started to run out toward the end of the season with all the complications that started to happen there. And so the Saints have now another opportunity to continue to build up that front, build up that offense, and then go all 2011 all season if they're able to add the right personnel. And then they'll be able to, feel really comfortable keeping their foot on the gas. All right, y'all, we're going to jump to another break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about another trade potential or potential trade that we could talk about for the NFL draft that includes some player, Andrus Peat. We kind of just talked about him, but we'll talk about all of the sort of dilemmas and conundrums that come along with that. So you got that coming up for you right here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, family, welcome back to Locked On Saints, your team every day. The big homie Brian Bieniemy here in the building. Again, make sure you check him out on Twitter at public_B_enemy. We talked about, you know, who the Saints could be looking at pick 62. We talked about that Frank Clark trade, and now we've circled back. We're back here at the draft. You know, we like to talk about trades. The Saints love to trade up. We've talked about that over the last couple of episodes. But Brian poses a really nice sort of scenario for Saints fans on Twitter this morning, where he was talking about another trade scenario that could work out for the Saints, but it would come with some complications. So we were talking about Andrus Peat a little bit earlier, and again, we're not trying to talk negative about anybody like that. It's just scenarios, and the Saints do what they need to do to get value in return, and Andrus Peat does have some value out on the NFL trade market, you would imagine, with his versatility, which we've already referenced earlier today. So if the Saints were to move Andrus Peat, let's start off first with what kinds of complications does that sort of create for New Orleans, especially with Max Unger having recently retired?
Well, I think what it does, and you know, at the very first moment, is it also creates a hole in other places. So basically what you're doing now is you're playing Hollywood Shuffle, because now you have to figure out who are you going to use to replace Andrus Peat if he's moved out. Mm-hmm. You just signed Nick Easton, and for, you know, all reports and all scouting reports on Nick Easton, he's a better guard than he is center. So mm-hmm. That means Nick Easton now slides over to guard. You're paying him actually like a guard, to be honest with you. They're paying him about, I believe, between $4 and $6 million a year. Mm-hmm. I have to look at the numbers again, but I believe it's somewhere around $4 and $6 million a year. So you're playing him like a low-budget guard, which is fine because you don't pay the top centers that kind of money. You pay them a little bit more.
Right.
So you're paying him like a low-budget guard. You play him at left guard. And now you have a dilemma about what are you going to do at center. Are you going to possibly have Will Klatsch play the position, or are you going to use a guy like Cameron Tom, who you've been pretty much grooming for the position since he came into the league?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it does. It creates, you know, basically the Hollywood Shuffle going on, and now you have to say, well, peace out, Easton in, Tom in, or you flip that and you say, okay, Easton's still going to play center for us. We're also going to have, you know, maybe Clapp or Tom play guard or something like that, but you know, or you draft a guy and you plug him in and see if it's plug and play. No matter what happens with that situation, it basically creates holes on the offensive line that you have to fill and figure out how you want to do it moving forward, and it also destroys continuity.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You're already having lost Max Unger, who retired this season, who is essentially the person, the stalwart at that offensive line, heads the offensive line. He's the cornerstone. He controls all the communication there. So you're already having to switch up communication, even with Nick Easton coming in and potentially taking over at center. And then if you end up in the scenario in which you move Andrus Peat, then you're replacing two out of your five offensive linemen and changing your communication head. That's a lot to deal with over the course of an offseason.
No question. And it also puts a lot of pressure back on Drew Brees, because now Drew has to call out all of the signals, mm-hmm. because you're not really sure if Cameron Tom at this moment, you know, at this moment in time, can kind of call out the signals properly and effectively. And you also have a guy, Nick Easton, who's just be coming in, and he doesn't really know the calls as well as, you know, as well as maybe a Max Unger did, or of course not, but, you know, like Max Unger did, or even Cameron Tom to this point, because he still has to learn it. And not that he's not a smart guy and can't catch on, but it still takes a little bit of time to build up that chemistry,
right?
Which is also the problem that you have, because now you had a guy in Max Unger who was used to calling out the calls. Andrus Peat knew exactly where he was supposed to go because of Max Unger, which left Teron Armstead one-on-one on the outside so he can do his job effectively. All of that changes now, and I think the loss of Unger will be one that they can, you know, overcome, but it won't be as smooth of a transition if they have to play musical chairs if Peat is gone as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. And I, you know, you can make the argument too that depending on what the Saints are able to do at pick 62, if they get somebody that they feel really confident in, that maybe that person can become Andrus Peat's replacement. But even then, you're still dealing with the same changing of the guard and changing communication and changing, you know, shuffling up everything. You're still dealing with all that, regardless of who it is that you have going in place of Andrus Peat. It's still a little tough to deal with.
And you have to be careful with the idea of injury, of course, because I think that's been Pete's biggest knock since he's been a member of the Saints. I think when he's on the field and he's healthy, you can see the talent. He showed flashes of being great. But I think the problem is that I don't believe Andrus has, you know, basically completed a full year since he's been in New Orleans. And I think that's a bit of a problem. He also has a $9.6 million contract that's on the books right now. And I think the Saints, if they're able to ship that out and get some type of draft compensation, maybe that actually opens the door for them to do other things with not only the salary cap that it would free up, but also the idea that it would also give them, you know, basically peace of mind, because moving forward, You have Michael Thomas you have to pay, Alvin Kamara you have to pay, you also have to pay Larry Warford soon. I mean, there's a list of guys that are coming up on the Saints because they're so young and so loaded, both on offense and defense. You're going to have to decide who you're going to pay, and I don't know if Andre Peet is one of those guys.
Right, and so we could talk about the pros then. We could swap over to that because there are some good sort of elements of an Andre Peet trade. First of which being, like you said, opening up salary cap. The other part of it is that, you know, the Saints have been very good at bringing in new offensive linemen, plugging them in, and seeing success with them. So, what are some of the other pros? What do you think that the Saints might be able to get for an Andre Peet trade?
Well, I think first and foremost, anybody thinking that the Saints are going to, because they drafted Andre Peet in the first round, are going to get a first round pick for him, that's out the window. I don't think that happening in his scenario. If they're lucky, they'll get a late second. I think early third is more, early to mid third is probably more likely what the Saints will be looking at. You look at a team like the Arizona Cardinals who could use a guy like Andre Peet. He can play left guard. He can play left tackle. They have a huge hole at left tackle no matter whom their quarterback is. And I think you look at a team like that, you say maybe the idea of them, you know, kind of needing to both the offensive line that was trade talks between the Saints and the Cardinals in last season for Patrick Peterson. So I think that's something you could revisit, even if Peterson isn't on the table as far as being a trade piece. You could definitely kind of call them up, see if they want to give a second, maybe a third, to see if you can get rid of Peet. And what it also does for you is it eliminates the idea of saying, what are we going to do at this particular spot? Because now you have your answer. You're either going to slide somebody in that's already on the roster, or you're drafting Peet's eventual replacement and you're praying for help. The one thing the Saints do not have is O-line depth, which I think that may be the only con, or the biggest con, in order for having Peet moved out. But I think as far as, you know, the ability to kind of start anew, start fresh, give Peet a fresh look, you a fresh look, that could definitely bode well for the Saints moving forward. Although, again, it does kind of destroy a little bit of the continuity you've built up over the years.
Right, absolutely. There are a couple of teams out there that could be looking to move in, or, you know, to make a move for an offensive lineman. You mentioned the Cardinals. You've also, there's also, I think we've talked before too about the Houston Texans. And then, of course, the Oakland Raiders have a ton of picks all over the place that, you know, Andre Peet could be maybe packaged into a point of conversation with them, but they're not really in the market. But Houston in particular, who, you know, was relying on Senio Calamete last year as a starter, which didn't really work out too well for them. He was rotational for the Saints and he was a great sixth offensive lineman, but he wasn't really that guy that you could say, we're going to plug you in and you're going to be the starter. He held up well, but didn't really work out too well in Houston. So they could be somebody else in the market as well. All right, Brian, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to come through on all this. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners what it is that you've got coming up next as we move into the NFL draft.
This Friday, 6 to 9, we'll be doing a draft show because, of course, the Saints don't have a first-round pick, so we'll be focused fully on day two, trying to basically pray and hope that the Saints find some way to weasel themselves either up in the second round or maybe into the third round to see if they can do it. If you look at the Saints roster, it's littered with second and third round picks, so the draft definitely matters, especially for a young team like the Saints who's going to build post-Breeze. So we're going to have nothing but draft coverage for you guys. Tune in, ESPN New Orleans 100.3 FM, and we'll be set to go. We're going to have a good time.
Absolutely, man. Do not miss that. Last year when they covered the draft, it was a ton of fun. And so this one's going to be a ton of fun too, especially because we know the Saints like to be mobile. We know they like to move around in the draft. So there's going to be a lot to talk about, especially if they do come through and make those moves. Brian, homie, thank you so much for coming through, man. Look forward to doing it again. We will not wait an entire year this time before you come back, though.
No worries, my brother. Like I always say, man, anytime, just reach on out and I'm here for you.
I appreciate you, brother. You take care, man.
You got it.
All right, y'all, that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Saints. Thank you so much for being here with us on this very busy week. And a big thank you to Brian Bieniemy for taking time out of his schedule to join us as well. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at public_B_enemy. And make sure you don't miss that Friday draft show he was talking about on ESPN Radio NOLA 100.3. It's going to be a lot of great information there, so make sure you check that out. And also, real quick, let's give a big shout out to Brandon Olson of Whole Nine Sports and John Sigler of the Saints Wire for coming through earlier this week, despite the busy schedules that we all have this week. So a big thank you to everybody for coming through and making this draft week very exciting and helping to complete everything that we need to know as we head into the NFL draft on Thursday. Now, one last reminder as well, if you are hearing this on Wednesday before noon Central Time, go ahead and jump into the Locked On Saints Facebook group, request to join, and then be a part of the live mock draft that I'm going to be doing with the group there at noon on Wednesday. That way you get to be a part of that. And then if we have some time as well after the draft, we'll also do a Q&A session ahead of the actual draft itself. So go ahead and jump into the Locked On Saints Facebook group. You can do that by going to facebook.com/groups/LockedOnSaints or by searching Locked On Saints group on Facebook. Both will get you there. So I got that coming up for you tomorrow. But for right now, I'm just going to say, as I always do, thank you so much for coming through. Once again, I am Ross Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at RossJacksonASC. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the podcast. And please take some time to rate, review, and share. All of that helps out a ton. To find Locked On Saints, just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Saints at home or in your vehicle. And make sure that you subscribe on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, as well as the new Himalaya podcast app, so you know when the newest episodes drop every Monday through Friday. Thank you so much for all your support and helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints, and trust, Who Dat Nation, I'll holla at you.